I can think of no better possible program that would train someone to write an essay on demand, efficiently, with good structure, with good style.
Hello, and welcome to the Arts of Language podcast with Andrew Poudois, founder of the Institute for Excellence in Writing, or as many like to say, IEW. My name is Julie Walker, and I'm honored to serve Andrew and IEW as the Chief Marketing Officer. Our goal is to equip teachers and teaching parents with methods and materials which will aid them in training their students to become confident and competent communicators and thinkers. So one of the things that we love to do with Ask Andrew Anything podcast is come up with some questions, Andrew, that you have not seen before.
I know. You try to stump me. But you generally know how I would answer most questions.
This is true. And for every one of you that submitted questions for this recording, if we don't get to your question, no worries. Our customer service team will be reaching out to you to answer your question. And if they don't know the answer to it, they'll ask their boss. And if their boss doesn't know the answer, on up the chain it goes until it gets to you.
Every question will be answered.
Every question will be answered.
No question left unanswered.
Yes. But we have to be careful with some of the questions. There's one question in here in particular. I'm not going to say what it is because then I'd be telling trade secrets. But what do I do if this happens? And then it's like, well, you just have to wait because we have a new product coming out to answer your question. So that's always fun to kind of get the inside scoop.
Hurry up and wait.
Hurry up and wait. That is truly our lives here. But our first question, which I love this, our first question comes from Ashley. And Ashley, you are of the Joyful Noise Learning. Is it a blog? Is it a podcast?
Well, yes, it's a YouTube channel.
Great.
And email newsletters. So hello, and I'm happy to be here.
So I love this. I love your moniker, Joyful Noise, because I know exactly what that means. Sometimes when we sing in church, it's sometimes a joyful noise and not very beautiful. It's more of a noise.
She's talking about the chaos of having a lot of kids at home.
It could be everything.
Are screaming,
right.
Laughing,
yeah.
Elated, whining, all at the same time.
Yeah. So Ashley, you are one of our IEW affiliates, and we have, you know, almost 100 IEW affiliates.
Really?
Yeah. You know, the term now, I guess, is influencer. So Ashley, you are influencing people to learn more about all the things that you're finding to be helpful. And we're just so honored that you have found IEW to be helpful in your learning environment. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about yourself, your channel, and then go ahead and ask your question.
All right. Well, hello again to everyone listening. And hi, Andrew and Julie. It's so nice to be here. I'm Ashley, and I've been homeschooling for about 10 years now, and I have three kiddos, so it's not a lot of kiddos, but two of them are boys, and when you get them together, it's not very quiet in my house at all, so they're outside right now. But yes, I have my YouTube channel, Joyful Noise Learning, and I've been doing that about 6 years now, I believe, but I love to talk about, you know, finding joy in the chaos of life and or homeschooling. So Andrew was correct in that, my vision for my channel. I love to use Charlotte Mason inspired resources and biblically based resources. Those are my main goals for my family and for myself as a homeschool mom. And one little like secret here is I went to school to be an English teacher. So I love literature, language, arts, all the things. So yeah.
And yet here you are.
And here I am
talking,
yes,
to us about IEW. And you have a question for Andrew.
Yes. And my question today is, oh man, I learned to teach literature and I learned to teach reading, no problem, but teaching writing was a struggle. And so when I found IEW, I was like, oh, this is how you teach writing. And so I was glad that I found it for that reason. But my son, he's 11 years old now, and he has told me he doesn't want to be a writer when he grows up. He is all about science. He is all about maybe reading. He doesn't mind reading, but his dad is a software engineer and he wants to be a software engineer, work with computers, or maybe a video game tester is what he says he wants to be when he grows up.
He's 11. Of course, he wants to be a video game tester.
We're continuing to talk about what else he could do. But when I bring to him our writing instruction time, he says to me, "Why do I have to do this, Mom? Why do I have to do this if I'm not going to be a writer when I grow up? I'm not going to be an essay writer or a newspaper writer or an author of novels. Why in the world do I have to learn to write?" And when he asked me that specifically, I kind of wasn't sure what to say. It's really hard because I love to do it personally. I don't know what to say to my child who doesn't think like I do. So do you have any tips on how to help this? And what do I say to him?
Yeah, sure. 11 years old is almost enough to have a mature level of thinking that would allow for this type of dialogue I'm going to propose. If it doesn't, especially since he's, you know, pushing back against it. So I think it might work. If not, just put it on the shelf for a year or two and then pull it back out. I'm going to give you 3 points here. The first point is there's a particular part of your brain that grows when you do things that you don't want to do. And it doesn't grow when you avoid doing things you don't want to do. And this part of the brain is actually very strong. It's very large in people who live a very long time. And so just from a purely neurological point of view, doing something which you don't like will make you smarter and stronger and give you a better functioning brain for the rest of your life. So that's point one. And my reference on that would be Andrew Huberman. So the Huberman Lab podcast, if you go and look for that, he's talked about it in a few different contexts. I cannot remember the very technical description for the part of the brain that does this, but he said it doesn't matter. You could call it a cookie monster. It's just a part of your brain that will grow when you do things you don't want to do, and it atrophies when you avoid doing things you don't want to do. Second reference I would give you here is Jordan Peterson, who talks about writing in terms of the distillation of thought. So writing is not actually the end. Our goal is not to have people who do writing well because they love it, which is, I don't even relate to that, or doing it well even because they will be in a professional position that requires it. You learn to write because it is the curriculum of learning to think better. So you collect up, you organize, you reflect on, you represent information. And that skill is absolutely cross-applicable to anything you will ever do in your life. So don't call it a writing lesson, call it a thinking lesson, and maybe you'll get a little more traction on that. The third thing I will cite is myself and what I often say to boys of approximately that age who tell me, "I don't like this." The first thing I say is, "I don't care." Nobody says you have to like it. That's not even one of my goals. I don't have for a goal any of my students to like writing. That would be, I think, an unreasonable goal, you know, any more than I would have a goal for one of my kids to like bell peppers. You know, it doesn't even make sense to me. I don't like writing, honestly. I don't do it in my spare time. I find it tedious. What I do like is having written something. I like the fulfillment of the task. That's where you get the, you know, positive neurotransmitters and anything. So I don't care if a kid likes it or not. That's irrelevant to me. But what I do tell them is this: whatever you are called to, and you don't really know, especially at 11. When I was 11, I wanted to be a lawyer. At this moment, I just say, thank the Lord I didn't pursue that path. But, you know, let's say you do get into software engineering, or maybe you go into the military, or maybe you're in garbage collecting, or maybe you get into politics. You don't know what God's going to call you to. But whatever you go into, you will notice it's the people who can speak and write and communicate well that will rise up into positions of leadership and responsibility and therefore be able to make a greater impact on the world. The best engineer remains an engineer because that's what he's good at. the good engineer who can speak and communicate and write engineering ideas will become the leader of the section or the vice president or go off and start a company. And that's true for any field. You look at the military, who's at the top? The people who can think and speak and write well. You know, who ends up owning the plumbing company, right? The person who can best communicate with employees and clients and government agencies and deal with, you know, language-based information. So what I would generally say to him is, you don't know what God needs you to do in life yet. You don't know what your calling is. You might think it's this or that or this or that, and that's wonderful. You can pursue those. But no matter what you end up doing, want to do, or what God calls you to do, you will be able to have a greater impact for the kingdom if you can communicate well. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes, Francis Bacon, he's not one of my favorite people, but he is. His quote, I think, is very, very practical and useful. He said, reading makes a full man, speaking makes a ready man, and writing makes an exact man. So we furnish the mind by reading and memorizing. We practice making those ideas accessible and available in a ready-to-go way. And things like speech and debate come to mind, where you have, you know, very short time to prepare. You got to stand up and speak. And then the writing is where you really hammer out and say, is this the precise idea I am trying to use to accomplish whatever I'm trying to accomplish? So those would be three things that I would point out to him. It grows the brain. It creates very precise thinking skills, which are cross-applicable in any area. And it is something that you will discover no matter what you go into, even if it's a technical or scientific field. It will give you the skills you need to do greater work for the kingdom in your life. So that's the way I would talk to him if he were here.
Thank you so much. That was very helpful.
Let me know 5 years from now.
Right.
If this worked.
When he's 16. So Ashley, I'm going to refer you and all of our listeners to Andrew's book, However Imperfectly. And Andrew, you have an article in here called...
You don't have to like it.
You don't have to like it. And the first line, the first sentence of this is, I don't really like to write. People can't believe that. What?
I can tell my son now, your teacher there does not like to write. And he's teaching you writing.
You know, there's one more thing I'd point out. You could ask your husband, do you ever write emails?
Oh, every day.
All the time. And if you get into a management capacity, it's continuous. So do you want to be able to write emails that are well-organized, effective, and don't take you a lot of time? Or do you want to have to slog through and struggle to construct emails that are going to do a job and maybe still fall a little short in terms of effectiveness? So, yeah.
Or they're just the all BRB, TTL, IDK.
Right. Well, you know, everyone has their way of communicating in a bit of shorthand, but the thinking that goes into an email, you know, when you get an email from someone who did not think before they started to write, and it's not pleasant.
Yeah. And I was also thinking about that email. You were talking about writing it and how if you know how to write, it's easier to create that email. But I'm thinking about the audience because, you know, we always have to be mindful of who's receiving it. Do they look forward to seeing your name in your inbox or do they go, oh, great, another email from this person? And we have people in our company that are really good email writers that we look forward to getting emails. So
we would hope everyone in our company.
We would hope that everyone at IEW would be excellent writers. All right. Thank you, Ashley. Really appreciate
that. Thanks for joining us today. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So here we go. This is from Rebecca, and she's from Scottsdale, Arizona, and she is actually a full-time school teacher, five-day-a-week school teacher.
Good.
And she says, just a very simple question, does IEW align with and prepare students for AP exams and courses?
Yeah, there's a very short answer to that. Absolutely. You know, much like what I was saying to our previous question, what we teach, if you boil it down at the very core, is thinking skills. And if there's anything that the AP exams attempt to evaluate, it's thinking skills. In terms of the composition side, yes, we've had dozens, hundreds probably, of kids we know who did 3-4 years of IEW or more, maybe less, and went in and, you know, aced their AP exams.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
Obviously, there's the content side. So if you're doing AP literature, you'd better have read some stuff that they're going to ask you to talk about. If you're doing AP history, you'd better have read some history. But in terms of the writing skills, I can think of no better possible program that would train someone to write an essay on demand, efficiently, with good structure, with good style. And so, yes. And we actually have a course called University Ready Writing.
University Ready Writing.
That would be available to someone who doesn't have time to do 2 or 3 years of IEW in middle or high school, wants to get as many of the techniques and tips and ideas for organization and presentation as possible in the shortest amount of time.
Yep, yep.
That would be, I think, a very good option for high school seniors, especially if they have, if they're in an AP class, if they have no previous IEW experience.
Yeah, so University Ready Writing. And Abigail, I don't know if you can post a link in our chat or if someone who is here can post a link. It's IEW.com/URW for University Ready Writing. And this is just a 12-week course. And like Andrew says, it presumes no knowledge of IEW. You can go into this with IEW knowledge, and that will certainly help you. But if you have no IEW knowledge, this can help you as well. Personally, after I was done teaching and I decided to go back to school and get my MBA. So you have to take the GMAT, which is an entrance exam to get into grad school, a business school. And I received a 5.5 out of 6 on my writing assignment. So that means that someone gave me a perfect score and one person, because they give you a 5 or a 6 or, you know, on a scale of 1 to 6, what do you got? You know, and I got a 5.5. So one person thought I did very good. Another person thought I did perfectly. So that's not bad. And that's because I knew IEW. I knew how to organize my thoughts.
Because you taught it to your
I
kids.
Did teach it
and you
to my kids.
To me,
and I listened to
you. For many years.
For many years. And I taught other people's kids too.
You know, we might also mention in this, we're talking about upper high school,
yep,
college. It is possible for people to use our SSS 1C
yes
high school course.
Right.
First year high school composition and grammar and get university credit.
Yep.
For doing that course in a dual enrollment type.
Yeah, two semesters, comp one.
I don't know,
two,
you know,
yeah,
if our high school teacher friend,
yep,
you know, if they do any of that dual enrollment, but for other people listening, you can actually get college credit for our high school course.
Yes.
So it is that rigorous.
Yes, and that's, yes, we could go into that. IEW.com/CHI for Christian Halls International. That will give you more information about how to get dual enrollment for the SSS, Structured Style for Students, Year 1, Level C class.
Okay. So, well, that was a long answer to a quick question.
It was.
All right. You got a long question? We can have a quick answer?
Well, no. They're all kind of, okay, I'm going to go into the next one.
Okay.
It's kind of related to that. This is Emily, and she's from North Dakota. I said that right. See, I was born in Minnesota, so I say North Dakota. You know, that's how you got to say it if you're from North Dakota. But what her question is, what do you do if you started late? Is it ever too late to start?
Oh, no.
IEW.
No, absolutely not. You know, how many times? Hundreds? Thousands? I don't know. We've had adults come to the teacher training course.
Right.
As parents, as young adults, as dads, as teachers. And almost everyone says, I wish I had learned this when I was in high school. Or I wish I had learned this when I was in college. It would have made my life so much easier. So it's never too late to learn the structure and style program. Obviously, some of the benefits of learning anything at a younger age is it's just easier, it's more natural, it becomes more automatic. You don't, you know, it's not something new that's replacing something you already learned or potentially in conflict with that. When you're young, it's just, okay, that's the way you do it.
Right.
And, you know, it's like kids go off to take college classes. And the teacher's, where did you learn to do this? Kids like, I don't know. My mom taught me. Or, yeah, we did this thing called IEW. So for younger students, it just becomes a way of doing things that then incorporated to their whole way of reading and writing and thinking and operating. But for adults, you can practice the thing, mm-hmm. apply it, and yeah, you'll get better papers for your graduate degree. Better emails and memos that you have to write. You'll get better blog posts if you like to do any of that. Yeah.
But also, if you have a high school student and you don't know where to start, year one, level C. Yeah. And guess what? You can get high school credit for it. I mean, college credit for it.
Yeah. Didn't we just say that?
We did just say that. Okay. They're kind of all tied together.
I guess we want everyone to know.
It's kind of a cool thing. Okay, so Marie is from Alberta. She has a question. My husband is a principal who wants to use your material in all classes, but longtime teachers and language arts enthusiasts don't see the need. Do you have any super persuasive arguments for unconvinced school staff? Now, before you answer the question, I want you to tell about that one teacher and her secret weapon.
Oh, I had been in a city and I had taught seminars, and then I came back to this same city, I think 2 years later, maybe, and I met this teacher. She was teaching sixth grade, I think, and she came up to me at the break and she said, I just wanted to let you know how well this is working in my class at blah, blah middle school. It's just awesome. Thank you so much. And so, you know, I'm trying to grow the business. And so I'm asking questions like, well, have other teachers in your school become interested in this? She goes, oh, no, it's my secret weapon. It makes me look great.
Can you believe that?
Well, yeah, I can believe it. But, you know, so the answer to this question is, as an administrator in a school, you only have a certain amount of power and influence that you could exert. So you have to be very careful. And what I would recommend is start small. Find one or two teachers who are open to giving it their best effort. Get them trained up with our video seminar or our summer training, mm-hmm. and get them some materials to use. Our schools division can help with that. But don't try to do an across-the-board, all-grades implementation, because then you're just going to get a number of people who just don't do it for one reason or another. Don't like it, don't want to change, don't believe they have the time, don't believe it's important, really like what they've been doing for years. And that, you know, you just let that go. But find the couple teachers who would like to try something that might work really well and get them on your team. And just have that small little group of the administrator and a couple teachers and do it for a year and see how it goes. And one of my suggestions to all teachers, and you can do this if you're a homeschool parent or a co-op or anything, do a before and after assessment, entirely qualitative. Nothing about, you know, running papers through AI to figure out how good the writing is. No. Just in the beginning of the year, give the kids, you know, 15 minutes, tell them to write about anything, you know, write about snow, write about your home, write about a pet, and let them write for 15 minutes. Don't help them at all. And when the time's up, ding, beeper goes off, collect all the papers. Don't even read the papers. Throw them in a manila envelope, put a date on it, stick it in a drawer, and ignore it. Then start teaching through the system, unit 1 and 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, however far you can get with whatever age of kids you're working with. Go through the units, teach the stylistic techniques, use one of our theme-based writing books if you need to, and at the end of the school year, give the kids the exact same assignment. You have 15 minutes to write about snow, write about your home, write about your dog. Ready, go. Set the timer, timer's off. Collect all the papers, or better, let the kids keep their paper, pull the ones from the beginning of the year out of the drawer, distribute them to the students, and let the students see side by side their beginning of the year and the after of the year. And they will see tremendous differences, tremendous differences. And I would bet a lot, at very high odds,
yes,
that the students who did the IEW curriculum for the year will show huge differences in the before and after, especially when compared with the students who didn't do right. the IEW curriculum for the year. So, you know, that would be kind of a qualitative assessment that would then allow you to say, okay, we see the progress. Now, why wouldn't we all want to improve what we're doing here? And worst case scenario, just fire the teachers who won't go along.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. That was really good. And we have some data on our website that basically shows this type of assessment that was done by a third party, independent party. There were the results even surprised us.
Yes, very, very dramatic results.
Yes, so and we're pretty confident that those teachers who implemented our method.
Husband principal, he should call and talk to one of our school's people.
Yeah,
and
we have a whole division within IUW that is helping principals, teachers like what we just described here to help implement IUW in the classroom.
But don't try to do, you know, every classroom, all grades. Find a couple teachers you can work with and do it well, and then you can really make the case. Well, the proof is in the paper here.
Okay, I'm going to look for a longer question, Andrew, because that was also kind of...
That's okay. Can I answer this question that popped up here?
Sure.
She's saying she hasn't really read the links that were sent to her by her customer service, but her question is, how do we model and teach the student to not use and to connect things in their writing? How do we teach them to use new sentences when appropriate? Well, that is a problem that almost immediately disappears and eventually is guaranteed to disappear when you teach the stylistic techniques checklist. So rather than saying to a student, don't do that, it works much better to say, do this. Mm-hmm. And give them a checklist. And so here, use an adjective clause. Here, use an adverb clause. Here, use a prepositional phrase. Here, use some substitutes for these words and practice this variety of sentence patterns in your compositions. And pretty soon, they're so busy checking off everything on that checklist that they don't have the time and space to put in and all over the place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the trick to not do what you don't want to do is to do what you do want to do instead of what you don't want to do. And we will give you the list of things that you do want to do. All right, what do you got for us?
Well, that is a really good question. And I've got another one kind of like that. My 13-year-old, this is from Jen, who is in Pennsylvania, King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
That's Philadelphia area.
Okay.
I know right where King of Prussia is.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Welcome, Jen, to our podcast recording. I love this. My 13-year-old, I suspect, do you suspect that they're 13 or that they struggle greatly in writing? Okay, the SSS program plus Fix-It has been excellent. I'm so happy to hear that. But I don't see the skills cross over to other writing, such as in science or simple note-taking, etc. He still misses capital letters and punctuation most of the time and struggles getting his thoughts down on paper. He's an avid reader, comprehends what he reads, and can summarize the story he reads through conversation. Do I continue to trust the process? I suspect dyslexia, as he misspells many words when writing, but can give me correct when speaking to me. We've added in more copy work this year and cursive. Any other tools or tips I can try?
Is that from Marie?
This is from Jen. And Jen, it's such a great question. And it sounds like you are a very conscientious homeschool teacher you're doing everything right.
So an analogy here would be, usually music or sports are the best analogies. And what you're doing when you're doing a specific kind of exercise, right? You're trying to train the skill in that exercise so that down the line, that skill will be transferable into a wider range of musical or athletic activities. But that does take time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't mean that the exercise you're doing is not effective. What it means is that you do need time to see kind of the natural integration of what you can do with other tasks. Now, in terms of science, you could certainly give him a checklist to use in science reports.
Yep.
He may balk at that, but on the other hand, maybe he would be happy because he would feel like the product was a little better in the long run.
And clear expectations.
And, you know, you're also following a process where he's writing, hopefully he's giving it to you. You are editing, which means, you know, fixing the spelling, putting in the capitals and periods if need be, take out the extra word, put in the missing word, be sure all the sentences are complete. Not trying to make it good, but trying to make it legal. And you give it back to him, he copies it over, and then he's done with it. So it's just a process, and it's going to go on for a long time. And anyone who's been involved in martial arts or sports or music or fine arts, you know, where you start is not where you end. But you have to start where you have to start. And for most of those things, it takes years. Yeah. And, you know, for a 13-year-old boy, I highly doubt that writing anything is the most important thing in his life. He's probably doing it just to get it done and be happy and go back to the really important things like Legos or Airsoft or building forts or coding games. Who knows? But it's just one of those things, okay, you're going to show up, you're going to do it, we're going to continue to practice it. And at a certain point, it is becoming easier and easier. And it's that point at which it becomes easier that then it's much more transferable. And I think you'll see that happen in the later teenage years. He'll be 15, 16. Maybe you enroll him in a dual enrollment class, and he has to write something for some other teacher, and he's kind of surprised. Wow, this is easy. I know how to do this. But you're kind of at the beginning of the process. And, you know, the other thing I say about 13-year-old kids is you read their writing and it sounds awkward and you're frustrated because you want it to not be awkward. But then you look at them a little more objectively, everything about them is kind of awkward. They walk awkward and talk awkward and feel awkward and feel awkward about feeling awkward and look awkward. And then in a few years, it's gone. That they grow out of that awkwardness. So that happens in, you know, biology and emotions. It also happens in skills like writing and language skills. Yep. So does that help?
That was a great answer.
That person?
Yeah,
I hope
so. Okay, I think we have time for one more.
Okay.
And I think it might be an easy one or not. So Celine wants to know if you have kept track of the read-alouds that you and your wife did with your children.
Kept track?
Of which books you read and whether they could be made available. So there's two parts to this question. Celine is curious if you read the books of The Swallows and Amazons series,
yes.
Since it concerns sailing.
So I did not know about these books. And then...
Let me just say that again. Swallows and Amazons.
Arthur Ransom.
Arthur Ransom.
Arthur Ransom,
yeah.
With an E on the end. I did not know about these books until maybe 3 years ago when we watched the movie Swallows and Amazons, which is a very well done movie, and we enjoyed it tremendously. And then we said, we can show this to all the grandchildren. So we showed the movie, and then one of my daughter's kids just fell in love with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, even just yesterday, Leo sent me a FaceTime video, a video message, asking me if I would please buy the next book in the series and put it in my Audible account, which he has access to. This is a 9-year-old grandson. And I don't know how many books there are total, but I know for a fact that those boys in that family are absolutely enamored beyond any other book.
Interesting.
With the,
wow.
The Swallows and
Amazon.
I haven't either,
yeah.
But.
And I grew up sailing too, so.
Yeah, you know, no, it is. It's a lot. It's a lot about sailing. But the movie's fantastic. Anybody can watch it. You could probably, you know, watch a movie, then read the book, or you could say you got to read the book in order to watch the movie. I'm sure there's differences, but I haven't personally read any of the books, and I don't have anyone handy to read them to. I'm actually in the middle of Pinocchio with my Oklahoma grandchildren, but I have thought about doing that, but then it's on Audible, so, you know. But yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about these books. And my daughter is pretty picky about literature. And being, you know, good and true and beautiful and wholesome and appropriate and everything. And she loves these books.
Okay, that's great. There you go. High praise. So great recommendation, Celine. And yes, Andrew has read them, but not to his children. Any other books that come to mind that you or Robin read out loud to your children as they were growing up?
Well, I think one of my favorites was Penrod by Booth Tarkington. That was recommended to me by Martin Cawthorn, who said he read it to his children every year.
Oh, wow.
Penrod. And it is. Yeah. It's funny. It's delightful. It's kind of like a baptized Tom Sawyer. Mm. It's just, it's a very, very good book. And I guess Booth Tarkington wrote a whole bunch more in that series. Mm-hmm. And we read quite a number of the books published by Lamplighter Press.
Oh, right. Yep.
Mark Hamby's publishing. Mm-hmm. And he kind of got all these old public domain books and set them beautifully and put them into lovely leather bound. So that's good. You know, there's just so many books. I can't necessarily remember all of them. One of my favorites was Around the World in 80 Days.
Oh, yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have literature mm-hmm. suggestions in all of our theme-based.
Yep.
And we have a downloadable file
yep.
on our website
yep.
called Books for Boys and Other Children Who Would Rather Be Making Forts All Day.
Yes, yes.
And it has elementary, middle, and high school reading level books. And we should give a shout out to our friend Sarah McKenzie.
Yes,
readalouderevival.com. She's got phenomenally well-curated book lists
yes.
in many different arrangements. So.
Yes. I have to tell you a story about Sarah, and I subscribed to her blog. Uh-huh, so yeah. I got a blog post from her right before Valentine's Day. And one of the books, picture books that she recommended was Someone Loves You, Mr. Hatch.
Oh.
Now, my maiden name is Hatch. And, you know, I lost my dad not too long ago. And so I sent the book anonymously to my brother,
uh-huh.
who is also Mr. Hatch. And uh-huh. so I was there this last weekend, and there was the book sitting on the table. So I read it out loud to my mother. And, I was having a hard time because Mr. Hatch is a little bit quirky and shy. And, okay, my dad's not shy, but he's definitely quirky. Anyway, I was reading it out loud, and my sister-in-law says, yeah, that book just showed up at our door. We don't know where it came from. And I'm like, I did. But Sarah's got some great recommendations for all ages of children.
Absolutely.
And also for grown-ups, too. My mom listens to a lot of Audible.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just look and see what Sarah's recommending, tell my brother to get it for her. And she's 94 years old and still is intrigued and enamored by Sarah McKenzie's recommendation.
Have you ever read or heard any of the Incorrigible Children
of
Ashton Place?
I've read them all. Incorrigible, oh my goodness.
I secretly listened to all those books. Yes. I didn't even have any kids around and yeah. I secretly listened
yeah,
to them.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. But now one thing that we've started doing on social media is every month we give one book recommendation for preschool, elementary, middle school, high school, primary.
Oh.
And then when we first did that in February, a lot of our people who follow us on social said, well, what about me? What about for the grownups? And so we started including recommendations that you gave on our podcast where we went through all the books of the year that Andrew was recommending. And of course, your book 2023 was
How to Think Like Shakespeare.
Right. So that's on our recommendations for the month of, I think that's for March, which by the time this podcast launches, you'll be able to go back and see March, but then we'll have April out too. All right. Well, Is that all we have time for? That is all we have time for.
Jennifer is asking, could you elaborate on how the Introduction to Public Speaking curriculum complements and integrates with the Structure and Style program? She could call our office.
She could.
And ask that question.
Can I answer that really briefly, though? First of all, it doesn't presume any knowledge of IEW. If you
It's a standalone course.
It's a standalone course, but we do touch on some of the models as you're preparing a narrative speech. Well, that's a unit 3 because you're retelling a story. If you're doing a self-introductory speech, that's kind of a unit 7 where you have to come up with content on your own. So there's definitely the ability to integrate the writing and the speaking in that course.
Yeah.
But the strategy for writing a speech is to write it. Well, keyword outline.
Right. Yeah. Keyword outline, write it into prose, read it a few times, be sure you like it, and then make an outline from the prose you wrote, and then speak from the keyword outline.
Yeah. So you still have to write it all out, but it's a really good course. It's a great Introduction to Public Speaking.
Yeah.
We should call it that.
Yeah, I think it's a catchy title.
I think it is too. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us.
God bless.
Thanks so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or just visit us each week at IEW.com/podcasts. Here you can also find show notes and relevant links from today's broadcast. One last thing, would you mind going to iTunes to rate and review our podcast? This really helps other smart, caring listeners like you find us. Thanks so much.